Being a graphic designer, you have to meet the client's needs at the end of the day. That is the paramount thing.
That is the thing I think a lot of people get caught out by, is they go, I'll put this rubbish one in, so it will definitely make them choose the other one.
Yeah.
Never do that. If you're not happy with it, don't send it.
Do you think perfectionism is bad or good, or is there an in-between? Because I think sometimes perfectionism really holds me back.
Hello and welcome to Well, You're the Designer, the podcast about being, well, about being a designer. We take the fantastic voyage through the minds of graphic designers, a safari of wondrous shapes, colours and brochure layouts. My name's Danny Powell. I'm not a designer myself, just a host who's drawn to design, the David Frost of fonts, the Oprah of open source, the Pantone Parky, if you will. I have with me genuine graphic designers, namely the Fonz of the Font, the Sheriff of the Serif, the man himself, Richard Kemp. Richard runs the design service that we offer for clients here at Solar Press. We have alongside Richard Oscar Jackson, who designs as part of our marketing team. So he's focused on promoting our own products and services online and via email and in print. And also Elise Collins, who works alongside Richard, expertly designing from whatever briefs land on her desk on any given day. And this week, we'll be asking what makes a graphic designer, discussing the talent, temperament and taste level it takes to do this kind of stuff for a living. So, what's the right stuff? What does it take? What do you need?
I guess, well, you need, yeah, a good eye for aesthetics.
Mm.
You need to be able to solve problems.
Mm.
And you need to want to do it.
Yeah.
I guess it's a bit of a vocation rather than a job, I suppose. Although you can probably make it, you can probably downgrade it to a job with the right with the right attitude. You could probably, yeah.
Have you ever worked alongside people who are very sort of 9 to 5 and just switch off and that's it?
Yeah.
Which, you know, no. It's not like I go home and proper, like nowadays, go home and like toil.
Mm.
But the passion's there.
Yeah.
Yeah, as a copywriter, I'm a little bit 9 to 5. And I remember when Matt first came over to the marketing team and he was saying, oh, you know, what do you write? Do you like write your own things? I was like, no, not really. I just go home and do other things, other creative things that I enjoy.
Yeah.
I mean, I have actually recently started doing a little bit of fictional stuff and writing something. My other half was away for a bit. And I didn't have much to do in the evenings, and I sort of wrote a story, and she read it when she came home. But yeah, having spoken to you guys, and last time the four of us were together, we talked about how passion, more than education, more than experience, is the thing that makes a designer.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, yeah, I don't go home. I guess, yeah, like you, I probably wouldn't go home and go, oh, I'm going to make myself a nice business card or something.
Yeah.
But I still like... So my wife is a teacher, and so sometimes she wants some things in the classroom and the budget's really low, but she's got this, you know, something she wants to get on the wall in some way, yeah, like some project or some chart.
Mm.
And then she'll go, oh, you know, and we'll have a chat about that. And I still enjoy that because it's like solving a problem, right? Mm. I've only got, you know, I've got 6 sheets of like brown paper and like 10 pens, but I need to create something that does X, Y, Z.
Mm.
Then I'm just like, that's a fun evening for me, I guess.
Yeah.
I think I tried to, it's quite hard because I love the job. I love being a graphic designer. There was time where I was out of it and I missed it. But I think being a graphic designer, you have to meet and have it as a job. You have to meet the client's needs at the end of the day. That is the paramount thing. And sometimes you do a design and they don't like it, and you have put your heart and soul into it, and it is soul destroying. So in that respect, I then think, well, in my own time, I want to do art that I'm the client for. I'm the customer. So I kind of do my printmaking as my hobby because I'm doing what I want to do. I'm going to illustrate what I want to illustrate. I'm going to put it in this color because I said I'm going to put it in this color, not you. So I have my 9 to 5 creative, but then I also have my hobby that's also creative where I take control.
That is so true. Yeah. Because I recently, I don't do it as much in my own time now, but before I started I did, but recently I made like for my front room, trying to like redecorate it and get it all done. I made some posters that I've designed. Like I turned album covers into like film posters.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, nice. Yeah, just like doing something for yourself is fun. Like when it's for yourself.
Yeah.
You can choose what you're doing.
Exactly.
Like, that is so true. Like.
But you still find yourself, right, seeing something like a poster or a book or a menu or could be anything and going, that's nice.
Yeah.
And maybe taking a picture and sending it to your colleagues, yes. Right? So do you get that as well, Danny? Like, I know like writing fiction is very different from writing copy. Mm. So I see that as a separate thing, similar to like at least doing a print and that.
Yeah.
But might you see a like just really well written like tagline or strap line or something go, and even though you're not at work, you go like, yeah, nice.
Yeah, and the team's chat that we have at work, you know, quite often someone will just bung in something nice that they've seen, you know, just as a bit of inspiration.
Yeah.
And I guess when you guys do your own creative endeavours outside of work and you have those ideas and experiments and stuff like that, does that ever then like bleed back into work? Do you ever sort of take those things and apply them?
I would say no, because as I'm part of digital marketing, we have a brand that I have to follow, I guess. So not really. Here and there, me and Matt might experiment, but I'd say what I do personally is quite different to what I would follow at Solo Press, definitely. Because obviously I'm part of the marketing team, but I guess if you have a, I wouldn't know if you have a client, I guess, can you?
Yeah, I think sometimes like just day-to-day life, like you'll see something, like you might have seen a new film at the cinema and you like the title credits or how the opening credits look and you're like, oh, that's a really nice, how they've laid that out. Oh, I could use that in a design.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or you see a poster and you're like, oh, I like the layout of that. Maybe I can replicate that and feed that in. So it's just, you find just day-to-day life. You have
to
life.
Wait for the right brief to come along and you go, yeah.
I could, you know,
there's like got a list of like I want to do one of those, but you need to like obviously like make it your own and not just copy a thing, but go, you know, I like the way they've treated the image, or I like the way they've overlaid the type over this much of the page or something like that, right? And then you go, okay, I really want to do something like that because it looks nice, but you still have to wait for something appropriate to come along.
Sure.
Yeah.
Something I'm dying to do right is I want to get a brochure job for like a haulage company, because once I was in the car as a passenger, like on one of the big roads, and it's all like traffic jam and that, and we're behind like a lorry with a container on, and I'm looking at the back of the lorry and it's kind of, they got all those bars going down, right, and then I've got all these codes and identification things and it just looks like absolutely cool, and I was just like, man, that is definitely, if I was going to do like a haulage or transport company, you know, like visual identity, I would be photographing loads of those, because you got all the kind of, you almost got like your own grid, because it's made with all the bars that shut the container. Yeah. And then you've got all these kind of like almost looks like Swiss style, right?
Yeah.
And you've got all these like codes and numbers like aligned with all these different like points and that. And it's just like, that is a really, like, so I'm just waiting. Please, our three listeners, don't steal that, because I really want to do it.
Or if you know someone that has a haulage company that wants a rebrand, come to Solo Press Design.
Yeah, yeah, because I just think you could really, like, really lean into it and it'll be, like, really strong, man.
Yeah.
Be cool. Yeah. So there's stuff like that when you go, like, oh, I could use that, you know, that looks really nice.
I guess keeping your eyes open about what's going on in culture. Maybe not so much the back of a lorry, but like what Elise was saying about, credit sequences and stuff like that.
Yeah,
that keeps you kind of on trend in a way, doesn't it? And if you apply some of those ideas to a client brief, they might then say, "Oh, it looks really current," without really being able to say why.
Yeah.
It will be kind of now.
I think having good cultural awareness is definitely huge. You know, you need. It's all about. Especially like with the encroachment of AI, it's all about, I think, what's going to kind of save the human, like creative basically, is that ability to take what seem like unrelated references, but you've got a pathway that goes from the brief to this reference that an AI wouldn't necessarily, because it's looking in such a small area. It's only looking at the keywords that have been given, which I guess most times would be fairly generic. Mm. Whereas you can make those make those leaps. But so the more you're aware of,
mm.
you know, if you're very, if you know about film noir and how credits look and how, and all that sort of like, you know, like pulp like comics and Pulp Fiction from back in the day. If you've got that aesthetic, if someone comes to you and they're like, I don't know, we're putting on a, we put on a kind of like punk night or something, or we're opening this bookshop, but it's like, it's going to be, it's not going to be stuffy. We want it to be like kind of, you know, a bit underground. Then you go like, oh, okay. And they're the sort of places you could look at, right? And like, you know, and all those things. So I think that's what I like. It's like finding things that you can like reframe in something else. I think that's what
I think there's a pro and a con to it as well, because day-to-day life also, like if you go to a restaurant and you don't like the look of their menu, like I'm one for this, I'm like, ew, I don't want to eat here if your menu looks like that. Like I get a bit like that. So yeah, I suppose you can get inspiration, but you can also get, I'm not doing that either.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I wouldn't lay it out like that. I like,
yeah, why have you bit done of that? Bad kerning can really bring the mood down, right?
Especially like shopfront signage.
Yeah.
You're like, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do that a lot. When I'm at my mates, I'll spot something and be like, that could be better. Or, like my friend who's a bricklayer, when he spots brickwork, he goes, don't like that brickwork.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So I'm
like, when I spot design, we're like, don't like the design, or I like it.
Yeah.
Every now and then I'll get a friend who'll send me a photo and go, we think you'll hate this kerning, yeah, and stuff like that. Because I've been with them and gone like, oh, moaning. Like, what is it? Go, well, the, so like behind like a learner car, right? And they've got their little box on top with, you know, like Bill's driving school, whatever. Yeah. And like the kerning's just proper messed up. And I'll just be like, oh, I'd be like, what is it? Go, look at the space between. Between the I and the L compared to the one between the L and the S. Like, it's like, how can you not see that? How can you think that's
but
good?
People don't.
No, it's weird, right? But like, only I Connect think that's is weird. The worst offender. Like, do you know the TV show Only Connect? Yeah. Right?
I don't know.
Okay, so it's like this kind of fairly niche but pretty cool, super difficult quiz show on BBC Two.
Twisted Flax,
right? Yeah.
But, four reads.
Stop or we have to mention them all. Right? So they have, so imagine it's classic panel thing, yeah. So you've got three people on each team and I've got their name on a light box basically in front of them. Okay. Yeah, can you imagine that?
Yeah.
It looks like it's set in Din, I think.
Yeah, I think it's Din.
Right. But the letter spacing and kerning is just like so messed up.
Mm.
But it's not. I know some fonts have bad default kerning, right? So you have to go in and sort it out.
Metrics.
Yeah. Optical. Yeah. So, but if you just put in some like dummy text with Din, it doesn't come out like that. Mm. So in my mind, there's a guy whose job it is Only Connect to go and mess up the kerning.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only
just
explanation.
Sat on Illustrator.
Yeah, but like every week, some of them are really bad. Like it's like, you know, there's a small continent between a couple of the letters. You know? It's just out there.
I have to go look at this stuff.
You need to.
Yeah.
Can I ask what Din means?
It's a typeface. Oh, right. Yeah.
Oh, it's a typeface.
It is a typeface.
What's the difference between a font and a typeface?
A typeface
is...
a
whole podcast episode.
Yeah. No, it's not. Right, it's really simple. And admittedly, it's taken me nearly my whole adult life to actually kind of be bothered enough to remember it, right?
Mm.
So that is a typeface. We're probably going to be wrong now, right? But a typeface is like Helvetica, right? That's a typeface, Helvetica. And within that, you have all the fonts. So it's all the weights, the italics. Yeah, so Helvetica...
The different classifications.
Yeah. So Helvetica Bold Italic is a font, which is part of the typeface Helvetica.
Got
you.
Nice.
Accidents, grotesque.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so this kind of aesthetic sensitivity that you've got is obviously a tool that you bring to your jobs. What about actual artisticness in terms of like draftsmanship or being able to sketch and things like that? Is that really nothing to do with it?
I'd say it's an advantage, certainly. But thankfully for me, because I'm a terrible draftsman, it's not essential. I would say that's my view on it. I don't know what you guys think.
What about you, Oscar? You're a sketcher.
Nope.
No.
I think everything just comes from my head and I just put it on the page.
Yeah.
And that's just how it goes. I'm not very good at that, yeah.
I feel like logos, like, but then logos, it doesn't, because it's just literally about, I guess, visualising the idea, mostly so you can get it out of your head, because once it's on paper, you know you're not going to forget it, so you don't have to spin it around so much.
I feel like I should be more of a sketcher. I think it's always helpful to be able to get, because...
It's good to sketch out layouts.
Yeah, it helps you get more ideas. Like, I feel like sometimes I get an idea stuck in my head so bad that I just... Like fixate on that and it screws you over a bit.
Yeah.
So I think that's something Matt's really good at, just freeing himself. And I think I need to learn how to free myself a bit. Like, I'm always just like, this is what I'm doing. It's in my head. I've already pictured it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm not really a sketcher. And I hate logos. I hate making logos. So there's something I've actually enjoyed a bit more now. I did hate it at first. But, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought everyone loved designing logos. Just generally.
They're not my favourite.
No?
I think because it's... like, it is a massive problem solver, I think. And I think... I don't know. For me, it's just like kind of like an idea or something for it. Like, say you have a letter A and a J. Like, how are you going to do an A and a J logo? Like, without stealing something.
Yeah. People want so much meaning condensed into it as well. Yeah. I know you've been doing an internal... project where they wanted to sort of incorporate the idea of a time span and award and this, that and the other, and it's just not going to mean that thing at first glance, but
it takes a lot of
people want to express a lot in
a tiny
I think you can try, but I think there is such a thing as like I don't really think that's possible. Right? If people keep going, I want it to mean these 12 different and slightly contradictory things.
Mm.
It's just pick two.
Yeah.
Be like, a stronger really. Meaning then. Yeah. Yeah, because you're just essentially diluting everything, aren't you, if you do that? Okay.
I think I'm quite old school. I've always been grab a bit of pen and paper and sketch.
Mm.
Yeah, layouts, logos, I will start with a... Because it can be... Especially if you're like doing a brochure and you've just been given kind of like some PDF, some Word document, and it's like, and it's all there, then I've got these little printouts. We've just got some like little kind of double page spread thumbnails, you know, like 9 to a page or something. And then I can just sit there, print out everything they've sent, collate it in the just the sheets of paper. So I understand what goes where, what ones will have similar layouts, perhaps, you know, look for, repetition and consistency in terms of like content, and then you can sketch out, start planning out the page order, and then kind of just to, otherwise, you know, blank page syndrome. You must find the same when you're writing, right? Blank page syndrome can be a bit of a, when you've just opened up a new document and with absolutely no idea what you're going to do, can be a bit.
Well, I think that in that instance, the sort of going straight to the computer's a good thing, because you can just tap down nonsense and then pick the sweet corn out of it. My experience of working with graphic designers a lot, I think must have been about 20 years ago, a bit more, when I started doing that, I would have seen a lot more sketches on paper at that time. I think people do go straight to the computer a lot more.
I'd say I use mood boards a lot now. I think
but digital
take
ones.
inspo from like Pinterest or I think that helps a lot, and then you pick out your favorite bits of whatever that poster might have or that one, and sort of obviously don't copy it, but you know, use similar sort of style.
Inspiration.
I'd say mood boards are closest I get to sketching. I never really sketch out a layout or anything. I think I really somehow visualize it in my head.
Yeah,
so being sort of aesthetically analytical is more important than being able to draw in terms of what makes
it. Yeah, in terms of like, you know, can you draw me a cat? I'll be like, I can draw you a thing that would remind you of a cat.
It's definitely, it's a bonus, because obviously going back to the education thing at university, there was a lot of illustrators on that course, and they were able to illustrate what, and it looks beautiful, and they could also merge that with the graphic design. So if it was like a book cover, they could actually illustrate that and provide the layout and the type and everything. It was like all in one, and they, whereas I would have to outsource an illustrator to do the illustration, then I would bring that in and then merge my graphic design with it. So I think it works both ways with with that respect, if you can do it, use it to your advantage, definitely.
Mm.
I definitely want to learn how to do illustrations. I was thinking about getting like a little, you know, little tablets with a pen.
Well, that's the thing, you need to learn your own style, because obviously every illustrator has their own style.
Yeah.
And I think it's a bit like, I mean, one of those things I mentioned before, why didn't I just do that? I could have done that 10 years ago and I would have been really good at it by now, right? But like, you can teach yourself to draw. Like a guy I know, he actually broke his back. Like, he's kind of recovered and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, but while he was kind of like recovering, he was like, well, I'm going to teach myself to draw because I've always wanted to draw. And he can draw, you know, like he does kind of like photorealism, essentially.
Yeah, see, that's incredible. Right.
So, and he's got no, you know, he wouldn't claim to have a particularly like artistic background or anything like that. I mean, obviously he has, because he was just like, I want to learn to draw, and then spends his time drawing. But until then, he hadn't, it's just been a thing, you know, like some people always want to learn the piano or something.
Yeah.
Right? And I think it's one of those things, weirdly enough, a bit like singing, you know, you can, because there's a process to it and there's mechanics to it. Obviously, you've got your people are going to be naturally, people with natural talent are always going to be that little bit better, like anything, right? Some people are just like, I find this easier, or I'm naturally better at it. But the actual, you know, how you build, using like basic shapes and adding light and shade, and like, it's like there's a system to it, and if you learn the system, then you can,
you've got all the tools.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, you can do it. So that's why I never learned to draw. But I always loved drawing, like I still do, but they're not like, you know, I couldn't sell anything or sell myself as an illustrator. But
I'm not an illustrator, but I'd like to say when I've done work in the past, if I was to illustrate, I'm more conceptual, so I'm more from a fine art way, where I feel something, so I will produce it, so it's very abstract. So the paintings and drawings I produce are very, probably would be in the more Tate Modern than the natural portrait,
right? Okay, yeah
because there's a story why I've done it a certain way.
Yeah,
because it's like emotion led rather than I've designed it for that reason.
Yeah, I guess a lot of illustration, feeling, it's like, you know, because like commercial illustration, why it's to a brief, isn't it?
Knowing about all those sort of schools and styles and things like that, does that ever get in the way of your flow? Is it ever sort of overwhelming?
I suppose in a respect you can, it's more of an aid, I'd say.
Do you ever overthink and kind of try and second guess yourself to a...
Yeah, I suppose if I was to illustrate something and think, oh, I'm going to do something in a Art Deco style and do like flourishes like that, then you've kind of got like, ah, okay, I've got that influence. It kind of aids you.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I wouldn't find it stifling. I'd find it...
But just like the kind of, you know, being overwhelmed by the amount of possibilities because you've
got this... But that's exciting.
Oh, yeah, but some people find...
Yeah, they go...
Some people do not like it. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I understand that.
And as well as all these creative skills that are demanded of you, there's also quite sensitive people skills required to do what you do and to sort of get ideas across, change people's minds, things like that. Does that always go hand in hand with creativity?
I mean, like, no. I suppose. I mean, I've changed.
There must be a lot of people, a lot of really great graphic designers.
Obviously, you have to be well
because of finding it difficult to work with clients and things.
There
like
is that
the artistic temperament. Yeah.
Yeah,
there is the artistic temperament, but graphic design isn't that artistic, I would argue, right? Because the word in it is design. So it's about problem solving and application and context. It's not about self-expression. There's a little bit in there, it's a sprinkling, but if you're into self-expression, then you shouldn't be a graphic designer because your job is to
make other people
happy. Yeah.
Well, that gets right to the heart of what makes a graphic designer, is that you've got to have that or job.
Yeah.
I mean, personally, I went through like, you know, I don't know how common this is. It might just be I'm a bit like that. But I think you go through phases, like, so you kind of start off and you're all like super humble because you don't know anything. And then you kind of, what's that called? Is it the Dunning-Kruger thing? You know, when you kind of, so it's when you know more than you did, but you don't know enough to be aware of how little you know.
Yeah.
right? So when you're kind of at that point, then you can, I guess I probably was a bit more like, well, you know, if you don't get it,
then you
know, I know what I'm talking about. I'm the designer and da, 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 right? And you can be like a bit of a ding dong about it. And then you realise that actually you really don't know that much at all, right? And then that's the tough slog, because then you're like back down in a trough and you're like, oh my God, I thought I knew some stuff. And I do know some stuff, but it's vastly outnumbered by the amount of stuff I don't know. And then you start kind of, you know, going, right, okay, actually it's not all about me and my vision. It's about it's about the client, it's about the brief, it's about, you know, all those things that it should be about. So I know we spent last season like going, oh, customers are rubbish and da-da-da. And it's, you know, not quite accurate, if you know what I mean, because like it is our job, but sometimes it's hard because you have to try and explain. Yeah, exactly.
That's what it's all about, yeah.
Yeah, so...
I think it helps having people skills.
Yes.
Definitely.
But they have to be learned, right?
Oh, definitely.
I mean, they certainly do.
They have to be learned, yeah. Oh, when I started, I was so bad at saying no.
Yeah.
So bad at, like, pushing back. I still am. I'm not the greatest, but I can definitely push back a bit more now and say no to things. Like,
because there's a fine line between giving the customer what they want or what they need.
Yeah, and then
compared to
it.
What they want,
yeah,
because I think the two don't always align. Maybe
no, I think you're right. I certainly have a lot in common with Oscar there about finding it difficult to
push
plow my own furrow,
yeah,
trying to blow my own trumpet. So I think this is all right. Yeah. I think in the past I've had you know, strong managers or account managers where you can kind of go to those kind of people if you're in a position where there's someone else whose job it is,
yeah,
sort of do that. But yeah, you have to sort of take it on the chin. And probably Oscar and I probably both would regard ourselves as introverts, would you say?
Oh yeah, 100% I'm an introvert. Yeah, 100%.
What about you guys?
I'd say you're both quite extroverted. From what, definitely you are extroverted.
Yeah, I'm kind of like, I guess the way I've described myself before is like I'm quite arrogant, but I have really low self-esteem. You know, if I'm trying to be objective about myself, then yeah, I am. I can be extrovert and all that. But after I've done that for a bit, I get very, very tired and I need like at least a day where I don't really speak to anyone as possible.
So then technically you would be an introvert then? So you can sort of put on an act of being extrovert.
Well, it's not an act. Like, I am like this. I think
not an act,
both of you, well, all three of you know me well enough to go, I am pretty much like this, but I can't maintain
your social
it constantly.
Battery drains.
Yeah.
So that's a fairly introverted
thing,
isn't it?
Social if you recharge by being on your own, you're kind of introvert. If you get your energy from being around other people,
you're
extroverted.
Oh,
I'm an introvert.
So if
we're all introverts.
I think that doesn't help. But I think people say being introverted doesn't mean you're shy, right? It just means you lose your social battery quick. But I'm quite a shy person as well, so I think just approaching people and be like, no, I think this works for your design, like, because their idea might be terrible. I'm not very good at pushing back. I'd be like, yeah, it's a great idea.
But that's where like language is people like a great help, isn't it? Like using the right words, so you're being clear about your thoughts, but you're not sounding like
rude.
Or like a dictator or something like that, you know.
I kind of when my friends call me the queen of fluff, because I love a bit of fluff and I can word something and make it sound really pretty and sparkly, and like just a little sugar, a little bit of some in it, it just makes it sound a little bit nice.
I can't do that.
It's a skill, you've been in those like design studios, right? And they're kind of the really strong culture of that, right? But about like, you know, they've got all the, you don't just send a design, you send like, you know, a design, and then there's like a couple of paragraphs talking about the design and
selling
the choices.
It.
Yeah, selling it, exactly.
To get it, the message that you want across, so they're aware of it, that why you've done certain things, and that we've listened to them, ultimately.
Feel it's
heard.
A good way to show that, you've listened to what they've asked for, and this is how you've interpreted that, I guess, right?
Do you ever come across that situation where you want to send a few directions across for options And one of the and the one that's your least favourite is always the one that they love.
That happens
yeah.
a lot.
Yeah.
That's it does happen. I try and avoid sending too many options. I will never send an option I don't like.
Yes.
That's the trick, I think.
That is the thing I think a lot of people get caught out by. Is they go, I'll put this rubbish one in, so it will definitely make yeah. them choose the other one.
Yeah.
Never don't do that. If you're not happy with it, don't send it, because they will. You know, there's at least a 50-50 chance they're going to choose the one you don't like.
Yeah.
So yeah, don't do that. Is my advice.
That's why it's quite handy to flesh it out as a team with your team first to go right. Let's lay them all out and what are we all thinking. So then you get a consensus and then go okay. Let's nail it down to these ones and we'll send that.
Yeah. I guess another trait you need right for a designer is that that you need to be able to take criticism and not take it personally.
Oh yeah.
Which is like tough, right? It's tough, but you have to be prepared for someone to go well. You know, it doesn't make the grade or like this just doesn't work. Because also you have to be, I think you should be efficient when you're working. So I would rather, if I think I can, when I give like criticism and stuff, not have to spend 5 minutes saying it when I could say it in 15 seconds because I need all that other time to pad everything and make sure everyone's going to... and put out all the pillows so everyone lands just perfectly. Yeah, sometimes I just want to go like, this is wrong because of X, Y, Z, so it needs to be more like this, or I'm not sure why this decision has been made. Yeah, and it's kind of... I guess sometimes I might come across as maybe a bit like...
Abrupt,
but in my mind, I'm just like... I just think, well, it's a... like, I'm just being efficient. Like, there's no question here. I'm not... doubting your knowledge or your skill, or it's just about, but we as a team need to like solve this problem, right? And if you're asking me, this is what I think.
I think that comes with the relationship you have though with the people, right?
Yeah,
you wouldn't do that to someone you've just joined the team, whatever.
If they just joined the team and there was, I'm not going to let them put out work I don't think is ready.
Yeah, but you're not going to be as
safe there. No, not as, but it won't be
forward. You'd be a bit more.
I won't be...
passive, let's say.
Yeah, but not probably as much as you would think I should be.
I'm trying to think if you've like how you are when you critique mine.
Because it's not rude, is it? But it is to the point, right?
I think you're explaining.
I'll look at it for a minute. I'll think about it. And then I'll go, these are the problem areas. If I have an idea of how it should be solved, I'll suggest it. Or I'll just say, these are the things that I think need solving. And then leave it to you.
Yeah. I think that's where experience comes in. Because there's... when I first started and I had critiques from senior members of staff, I used to go home and cry because I'd think, I've done it wrong. And I'd think, I've put my heart and soul into this design and he's just took a massive damp on it. And it's like, it's an extension of myself. But then you have to think, I need to disassociate myself from, detach that. That is what I've produced. This is my job. If I was a labourer, that's the wall I've created. You've smashed it down. Okay, I'll rebuild it. So I have to kind of... So now,
yeah, but you wouldn't smash it down, right? You go like the...
There's too much cement there.
Yeah.
It'd just make be that like, thinner.
Yeah.
Water it down.
This isn't quite level. This is too this. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so a great over start. Time, I think I've took that on board. So now I'm at that level where when Richard says something like, wouldn't do it like that, and I'm like, okay, yeah, I agree. Or there might be times where I'm like, well, no, I actually think it should be like that. And then it's like... But then that's fleshing it out and being a creative team, because we both listen to one another and you need to do that to get, because you both want the right end result.
And also sometimes I've just gone, actually, do you know what? I'm getting way too involved in this decision that really isn't going to be neither here or there in the big picture. So I'll just suddenly stop and go, well, do you know what? Whatever you think, as long as like these three things are met, then do that and we'll have a look then. And I'm not going to get involved in these like minutia. Yeah.
Because then I suppose it then borders onto, what's the word? Like when you're...
Micromanagement.
And when you've been in that situation before, you're like...
To me, micromanagement be like, you know, do this thing, but do it in this way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if I say, I don't know, sort out your like ragged edges or something, I wouldn't then go... by selecting your pen tool and like, or you know, type watching. Tool and then watching and going, oh no, you know, don't use this finger, use that finger to press return. I think that's micromanaging, but saying you know, like you need to sort out like your, yeah, like your ragged edges or your line spacing or something like that, I don't think that's micromanaging. That's just making sure everything's done properly.
Oh no, you don't micromanage.
Yeah,
I think for me, having you and Matt as like guidance is quite nice, because Matt, I think you and Matt are very different in the way you criticize people.
Mm.
Like you said, I think you're quite, not blunt, but
I'm a little bit blunt
to the point, you know, get the point across. But I still think you come across like nice. You don't seem like a douche,
because but, it's enjoy. But Matt, I think I enjoy that part of the process as much as anything else, to some extent.
Matt's quite calm about it, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
Which I like as well, because it's sort of like a nice break from.
He's more like if Jim Henson was your manager.
Who's Jim Henson?
The guy invented the... I mean, first of all, yeah.
Should I know?
Your reaction is correct to this.
Should I know? Yeah, yeah.
There should be like something come up on the camera.
Should I know him as a designer?
He created the Muppets.
Oh, I've got Oscar the Grouch. Oscar the Grouch?
I've got
Oscar the Grouch mug.
Yeah,
but I don't know who Jim Henson is.
Oscar.
I'm too young.
Well,
this is like asking.
I'm
like
fed up with this excuse that if something happened before you were born, there's no way you should know about it.
Yeah, but there's not.
Have you heard of dinosaurs?
Yeah, of course.
Right. Well, they before so your niche. Time.
The Muppets is so niche.
The Muppets are known for being niche.
No, but obviously not in your generation.
The cult following the Muppets.
I'm getting bullied here. This is. But hey, like, if I ask a baby, do you know what a PlayStation 2 is? They're going to be like, yeah, I know what a PlayStation 2
is. Because they're a baby.
Oh, yeah, that is true. But if I ask like a 10-year-old...
with PlayStation 2, you go, well, there's a PlayStation 5, so I guess it's an older one of those.
I guess. All right, what's more niche, isn't there? It's just niche your generation.
Another niche thing, the PlayStation.
All right, if I go to a kid, when I used to watch CBeebies... Did you watch...
Balamori?
Yeah, that's it. They wouldn't know what Balamori is.
Do you know what Balamori
is? Balamori is not on the same level as Jim Henson and the Muppets. I'm sorry.
We've gone off tangent.
We have gone off tangent, I think it's for a good reason.
I think you're overlooking into this too much. I think you shouldn't care as much.
In my head.
I don't, but it's just like... I think maybe it makes me... Because you're right, I guess. You know, like there's probably people that were... massive in the like 1910s or something. We have no idea who they are. And I think there is a point, right, when these massive cultural icons suddenly no one knows who they are.
It depends on your childhood as well. Like, yeah, I only know Oscar the Grouch because my name's Oscar. Okay. He's also got a ginger eyebrows.
Well, I guess
he's
technically
on Sesame Street, isn't he?
Mm. Yeah,
are they still Muppets if they're on Sesame Street and they're not on the Muppet Show?
I don't know, actually.
Are they? Mermits on both.
Are they Sesame?
He's Sesame Street. I know that. And he lives in a bin.
He does.
Sure does.
And he has ginger eyebrows, what I believe. And that's... Yeah. But that, I'm ginger, Oscar.
That's still Jim Henson, yeah. Anyway.
So Matt controls Oscar like a puppet, is what you're saying?
Yeah.
Well, no, but he's got that kind of, you know, laid back...
Who are you then?
A little bit Bob Ross or something, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Like that kind of vibe, yeah?
Nice.
Me, that's I don't know what I am.
That's a good way of explaining Matt, actually, Bob Ross.
Yeah.
He's very soft.
You know, it's okay, don't worry.
Yeah. You know. It's a little bit more whiplash with Rich.
Whiplash? Oh, thanks.
Off that.
Oh, dear.
Who's someone that I could compare you to? I know of.
I can't think. Who would be?
I'd just be a regular guy.
An SAS Marine corporate.
An SAS Marine corporate?
Yeah.
What, like a drill sergeant or something?
Yeah.
Is that what? The guy from Full Metal Jacket?
This is my rifle, this is my gun. Yeah. This is my fight, this is for fun.
Yeah, that's me.
Yeah.
Drill sergeant, yeah, always shouting.
So you need a thick skin. What have you got so far? You need a bit of aesthetic sensibilities.
Yeah.
You need...
Attention to detail.
Attention to detail, passion to learn.
Bit of a thick skin.
People skills...
Or thick objectivity, skin. I guess, probably, rather than thicker skin. Because I'm not
so
particularly thick-skinned. It's still kind
back.
Of...
Creeps through.
Yeah, you know, it's still... Obviously, if you do something and then you get told that isn't good enough, for want of a better phrase, right, then I think most people are going to be a bit like, oh.
I think with the right criticism, you can be like, okay, yeah, fair enough, good point.
Yeah, if it's constructive.
But if it's not constructive at all and you're just, that's not good enough, don't really explain why.
It's
got
to be actionable, I guess, right, with criticism. It's got to be actionable.
Yeah.
And the same with, like, because, like, praise is really good, but if it's just, you know, that's really good, although it can be pleasing for a second, but if someone can break it down and go, like, the way you've done this particular thing is, like, really clever, I wouldn't have thought of that, yeah? Like, that's really great. Yeah, I think that can be more. That does mean more, right? Then, yeah, that's brilliant.
I've got a question. Do you think perfectionism is bad or good, or good, or is there an in-between? Because I think sometimes perfectionism really slows me down and holds me back, because I'm like, I should probably stop on what I'm doing and just let it go. But I'm just sitting there like thinking this isn't good enough, even though it probably is.
Mm. Goes back to imposter syndrome, doesn't it?
You really think so?
Well...
Have I led us to that topic?
Maybe it goes forward to imposter syndrome. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it does go forward. Well, at least, if you don't mind me saying,
no, you go
battles
for it.
With perfectionism on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And I've tried really hard, but that I tried to like kind of, you know, come up with these things you might find embroidered on a tea towel or something, you know, like some sort of saying that might help her. And basically the way I tried to flip it around again, well, if you want to be a perfectionist, yeah, you can't be a perfectionist because perfectionism to me is a flaw, right? exactly.
For me, I think it, yeah, I'm quite a perfectionist
because no one can do anything perfectly.
But I just think, you know, life's too short. You only live once. Just sometimes you've got to let yourself
I wouldn't go down to, like, it, good enough is good enough and all that. Definitely, you know.
No, but no, I mean,
reach like... reach for the stars and all that, but don't punch yourself in the face if you don't quite make it, you know. Yeah. Just, like, go, well, I tried, and that's all you can do, right? Try really hard.
As long as you've tried your best.
Yeah, and in some ways, yeah. Yeah.
That's
it.
There's something Oscar touched on there is, like, the time it takes. All those kind of attributes for a good designer that we list, they're none of them worth a damn if you can't kind of do it quick enough.
Time management's so big.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess, yeah. Yeah, yeah, time management. And sometimes, especially like the way we like roll out the work, then you can be having, you're trying to get a design done, but also you're getting like pinged from different platforms, from other departments going, can you look at this job? Can you check that artwork? Can you... You know, all the things that need doing, right?
Customers phoning.
In a busy print company, right, which is where we work. So that is definitely a skill where you kind of learn to go, oh, okay, and just try and keep, I guess, your stress levels down because you're, like, worrying that you're not getting this done, and just having that confidence that if you need to do that in half an hour, you can do it in half an hour.
So if we're going to sum up then what makes a graphic designer, right, it was aesthetic sensibility. It was not necessarily being able to draw. It was passion. It was attention to detail. It was people skills.
Yeah.
Thick skin. Time management.
Yeah. And the ability to do graphic design.
And the ability to do graphic design.
Brilliant. I mean, yeah, that's true.
All right.
Just in case.
Job done. Question answered.
Yeah.
I think we've done all right. If you have any thoughts, experiences, or questions you'd like to share, don't hesitate to reach out via Solar Press YouTube channel, your preferred streaming platform, or our social media channels. Your feedback is really valuable, so please remember to like and subscribe and leave a comment. And if you've enjoyed today's conversation, join us again. This has been a Solar Press podcast brought to you by Poppy Productions. Thank you for listening, and we hope you'll join us again next time. Thanks, and goodbye.